Welcome back to the Inside Pass, News 24's dedicated Rugby World Cup podcast. My name is Lloyd Bernard. Joining me in the Cape Town studios once again, Haman Mostert. Morning, Haman.
Morning, Lloyd. How's it?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And we are very pleased to welcome Stormers coach John Dobson into our Cape Town studios with us today. Welcome, Dobbo. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Lloyd. Thanks, Herman. Thanks for having me.
Very, very good to have you here. Leandra, our entertainment editor, asked if next time you could bring some rugby players with you. She'd appreciate that. But no, we know you're busy, Dobbo, with preseason training. The URC obviously kicking off on October 21. You guys are away to the Lions, so that's a tough little fixture to start. But, you know, fully in the swing of things now, you're sitting here in your tracksuit and obviously coaching this morning. How are things going at the moment? Liking what you're seeing from the guys?
Yeah, she's brilliant. I don't think we've had this energy. We identified, yeah, often when you lose, like we did that final, you sort of see things that you need to improve. Probably learned more from this URC, obviously, by losing the final. There are three or four things we're really going to work on. I think Warwick Hillant and the guys coming in have brought some energy. Steve, Liesel, Cortnell. I don't think I've ever felt as good about the squad where we are at this stage of a season so far. Having said that, something will probably go wrong, but you know, it feels in a really good energy. You know, we could play this weekend, and normally you feel like jeepers, we've got a lot to do before we play our first friendly. So we're in a good space, you know. And like we're talking about before we came on, we got a new field, like a kid on Christmas Day, and there's a new bike. Brock and Nietlin were walking out there the other night for hours, going over every corner of it. So it just feels like we're in a good space.
It'd be nice for the guys to have a scrum and stay on their feet.
I think it had a big look. We're not here to talk about the Stormers, but it had a big impact on that final. Yeah, half my budget goes into our front row. I'm exaggerating, but half of it goes in the front row. But then they can't move their feet back because they're going to slip and give away a penalty. So, are we excited?
Is it a different kind of vibe at training now when the guys are watching? You know, 1 hour on the Rugby World Cup, or they're fully dialed into Stormers. I mean, the guys must be watching all the games and watching the box go through the tournament. It must be a unique time.
Yeah, listen, the box have been on the weekends, and not much talked about. I think what is a big piece, which is great, is the camaraderie with the players. So they're talking to their mates in the Springbok team. There seems to be a real bond. I mean, what is nice, you know, sometimes you can get, listen, if I'm not in the Springbok team, or if I'm not in the province team, or if I'm not in the school first team, I'm a bit jealous.
Yeah.
And that's where I would have been, you know, like if I'd been left out or... These guys are completely behind the team, you know, which is brilliant, you know.
Yeah. Let's start talking about, you know, the Springboks and the tournament, what we've seen so far, Dobbo. And I must fill you just firstly with, you know, immense pride seeing guys like Marnie and Damien, you know, on that kind of stage operating the way they are. I mean, Marnie in particular, I mean, you've got a few guys over there, key players as well. But Marnie's story is quite a special one. And seeing him over the last 2 years, you know, leading the box at a World Cup with a number 10 jersey on his back, must be quite special for you.
Yeah, I think for Marnie was a project we took on, based on just seeing this guy could attack and pass a bit. And the way it's turned out is a fairy tale. So we look a thrill for Marnie. Yeah, look, obviously France and Kitsie were established.
Yeah.
Yeah, rehabbing Marvin. I know he's not front line, but I mean, there's not many locks in the world who would be ahead of the Springbok front line, you know. That was great to get him back in. And Dion Free, yeah. But Dion and Marvin are the things we feel so proud about, you know, because I think if you told me that Marnie's going to be a Springbok and Dion Free's going to be a Springbok a year and a half ago, I was sitting there, you're on something, you know. So it's a source of much pride for us. And the fact that he's doing so well, yeah.
Yeah. Look, John, I think, like you said, like 2 years ago, if someone told you that Marnie was going to be the starting Springbok fly half, you wouldn't probably have believed them. You know, he's played superbly. I mean, he's man of the match against Scotland in that first game, and he's the starting number 10 for the box now. He deserves his spot. Obviously, one little issue about him is that keeps creeping up is the goal kicking. For me, I don't know if it's just a perception, but it feels like when he's playing for the Stormers, he seems to kick better to posts than what he does for the box in a way. Obviously, you guys have got Gareth Wright, who's the kicking coach there. The box don't have a kicking coach. Do you think that may have some sort of influence on it, or is it just the pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I was one of those guys who was propping up a pub saying, you know, Gareth should be there because they've got a very special relationship. And I think I don't know what the stat is, but I do also get the same sense as you. There is a difference. But with us, you know, every time there's a really big kick, and there have been four of them, one of them being Ulster in the semi-final the first season, he gets them over. But just because But then I saw that, I saw Rusty them saying, listen, you know, you can't have everybody's independent coaches there. And I understand that argument. I think given the level of flashpoint that it is in the World Cup, maybe there was a case for it just because their trust, it's not an average kick. I mean, I don't coach Marnie. You know, I think I've backed him, but I don't coach him. I'm not responsible for him being, Gareth had a massive influence on him. And I think whatever it takes to make him feel better in that environment, I would have considered it.
So is there any contact now with, between Gareth and himself now in the World Cup?
Yeah, I think that's encouraged by the management and that's completely ongoing. I would have thought there may have been an argument for Gareth and Marnie and on an off day, if Gareth doesn't have to have the kits, you know, in this high school somewhere near in Paris, over a few things. But I think their content, I mean, they're videoing each other kicking and that sort of stuff. So, the difference between Marnie and Andre is quite a small percentage, isn't it? Mm. But I'm just not sure about the national level one, you know what I mean? Yeah. But their goal kicking is quite smaller.
And then... Like you said, Marnie is the type of player that he seems to thrive on a big occasion. You mentioned that kick against Ulster in the semi-final that he kicked over. Obviously, Andre Pollard has now been called into the squad, but Marnie is still deservedly the starting fly half, and I think probably going to be for the rest of the tournament. But how do you think Pollard's presence there have influenced him, you know, mentally in a way?
Yeah, that's something I'm thinking about because I thought it was genius. My view or my thinking was Pollard must have been very close to fit, if not fit, when the squad was announced. By virtue of the fact he played last week. So he must have been, you know, we talked only 2 weeks into the tournament.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are teams like the French who got players who weren't fit at the start, who they know by week three or four. So you could have included Pollard then. And I thought not including Pollard was actually genius because Marnie, the key with Marnie is that he feels backed. And I think it's what happened to the Stormers and that's what's happened to him at the start of this World Cup. The arrival of Pollard is what I presume is an insurance policy. Now, I don't know what effect that will have on Marnie because I don't know what's gone on. There may have been a conversation, Henry's here in case you get injured, or Henry's here, somebody might look at a 12, yeah, and Damien Delenda moves out one. So I don't know. I just know Marnie does it his best when he's backed. I can't see the Springbok management being as, you know, as to have said to Marnie, you're going to have a good game, otherwise we're bringing Andre in to drop you. I think that would have explained it well to him. But he does feel, hopefully they've said to him, you know, we're going to back you the whole time. If you get injured or something cataclysmic goes wrong, that's when we look at Andre.
I always tell Dobbo the Marnie Lebok goldfish quote that you gave us at a press conference the one time. I've told that story so many times, but I think it's fitting because, you know, one thing through you that we've learned about Marnie is that, you know, it's not going to linger with him. You know, if he has a couple of bad kicks, he kind of moves on from it quite quickly. You know, based on that, do you think that going into a game like Ireland, you know, all of the chatter around the kicking and everything that's happened before won't really be on his mind as much as we might think?
I don't think it's, yeah, I would agree. Goldfish. I mean it in a nice way, but you know, often we've got this paradigm about mercurial players that when the things go wrong, they go cataclysmically wrong. I mean, and Finn Russell's like an example. If Finn's having an off day, the whole thing's going to collapse. Marnie's not like that. You know, he does have off days, but he's just got this ability to just stay in the moment. That's all he is. You know, we made a terrible mistake in the last few minutes of the URC final. And speaking to Marnie afterwards, he saw it wasn't a big... He didn't think, jeepers, because we kicked this kick, we've lost the final, or because he got kicked charged down. That was just one component of the game. There lots of stuff is excellent. He literally sees it like that. He doesn't... He's got a really good big match temperament. Like I said to Lloyd, the goldfish thing, when he's missed three and he's lining up his fourth, he can't remember he's missed three. Yeah. And I mean, he's just got the ability to reset. So I don't think Marnie... I think if people think Marnie's going to be deterred by the occasion... The fact that the Irish are definitely going to come down his channel, he's up against one of the most obnoxious flaws in the world rugby. I don't think that affects Marnie. I think he's literally in that second. Because of his style, he does make the odd mistake, but it doesn't bother him.
Look, I mean, that game against New Zealand at Twickenham, he kicked 5 from 5. And looked flawless in that game. And I mean, that was a pressure cooker. I mean, there were about 80,000 people in that stadium and he performed there. So it's not like, you know, he has that BMT. It's not that we doubt that.
That's what people don't realize. Yeah. It's because he doesn't go 8 from 8 all the time. People don't think he's got BMT. Also, you know, he's a quarterback at international. What's he test? I'm going to guess he's single figures. Has he got to 10 tests? No, I don't think so.
Right about that mark.
Yeah,
maybe.
He's getting about that. a guy who hasn't been overly backed in his career. You know, it's only the last year or two that things have gone well for him. Playing in this sort of pressure environment, but also living on the edge, you know, like he does. I mean, he could sit 3 meters backwards, I think, and we'd all think Marnie hit the box solid. But he's adding a different element. And the element that, you know, I like, obviously, the flatness of his passing game, but the element which is really good for us, which Marnie brings, is, you know, our back, you know, the Springboks we've discovered over the last while, almost like the New Zealanders, these really X-factor outside backs, you know, whether it's Kurt Lee, you know, Chesney's been around for a while, we all know that, Kane. And now with, if Marnie, because often your 10 is in backfield, if their chase is not good, or, you know, we've won a kicking battle, or we put them under some pressure and they've exited poorly, to have a backfield which has got Marnie, Damien, Verlumse, Kirtley, Ahrens, it's a whole different dimension to our game. And if we sacrifice one, because if we're talking about 79% versus 75%, we're talking about 2 points a game. I don't know. It's worth it for what we're getting.
Let's just chat about Damien Willemse a little bit, Dobbo. I mean, you know, the word that comes to mind for me from the outside looking in is maturity. I mean, you've got to be a pretty special rugby player to dislodge Willie LaRue from the number 15 jersey, you know, in that box setup. But, you know, Damien, just over the years, I mean, given the rugby player he is now, I mean, that progression, you know, if you remember the goose-stepping number 10 who was trying a million different things under the sun when he started, you know, his Stormers journey, and to the player he is now, just dependable, calculated, still has that X factor and ability to do something, but just, yeah, I guess just so much more mature now than what he was those years ago. I mean, do you think he's just at his absolute prime right now?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, we still haven't solved, still haven't solved the positional thing. I'm still having the same 7 years, 6 years later for 2017. What is Damien, you know, because, you know, suddenly we think he can cover, he's covering 10 this weekend, I presume, 12. But I think you're dead right about his maturity. I mean, that this guy, I know his GPS stats for us. He runs 8Ks a game. He's just so desperate to win. And he's incredibly, you know, he's such a physical presence now, which I think he wasn't when he was smaller. And he's just such a consummate team guy. And that's not, you know, the paradigm, when we first saw him, amazing goose stepper, crazy offloads, and then we all put him in a box, don't we? And he's actually become everything that the box is not. That's hardworking, sacrificial, making X amount of tackles, under the high ball, just do anything for the team. And every time we have a positional conversation, it's literally this simple: wherever you need me, you'll play wing for us tomorrow. So he's such a mature guy like that. The thing that frustrates me a little bit about Gaza is, as you say, he still could beat, if Warwick Kaland beats one guy, we've got a 50-meter line break. Damon beats four and we've only gone 2 meters. Because he's the old guy, he could step around a shower and not get wet, you know. So, but I'd love to see that more of that striking element. Certainly the other elements he's covered off magnificently, which is what we thought wouldn't happen, when he was a youngster. So, like, I think he's one of the first names down on a team sheet.
That boot's gotten very good as well in the last couple of
years. Yeah, his general kicking game.
But don't worry too much about positions, Dobbo, and where to play Damon, because positions in rugby seem to be mattering less and less. By 2027, we're going to have 23 forwards playing a game of rugby at the World Cup. On that, I mean, it caught us by surprise. Rassie had flirted with it a little bit. I mean, but just give us a sense of, you know, as a coach going into a game of this magnitude with 7-1, I mean, it's obviously the talking point of the week, simply because of the risk. I think we were chatting yesterday on this podcast, Hammond and I, about risk and reward, and weighing up those two things with a decision like this. But how do you view the Bok decision to go in 7-1? Masterstroke or madness, or is it, you know, dependent on the result?
I'm exactly where you guys probably discussed yesterday. It's very high risk. My feeling is that if this had been the Scotland game, we wouldn't have done it. Because I think the truth is, we threw to the quarterfinals. From once we'd won the Scotland game, we were through. And so now I think there's an opportunity to destroy the world's best number one team. I think had we had to win this game, because, you know, I know from, we go 6-2 at the Stormers and we're nervous. You know, we had it in that quarterfinal against Edinburgh in the first season when Sasha Gomez, Ricus Pretorius went off in the third minute. Sasha, so that means you had to sit with that one back and we were under real pressure. So 6-2, you've always got to have another plan, like a Paul Devec can play wing or a Cheever could go to wing.
Yeah.
I would never have the courage to do this. Never, ever, ever. But I think, you know, we all having the debate, France or New Zealand in the semi-final. I don't know, maybe they've got a view on it, or maybe they've got a view, it doesn't really matter. But I think this game is a devil make, it's a free hit, this game. And if the 7-1 comes off, you could do some real damage, and you know, to end Ireland.
Yeah.
And Ireland have to go and beat Scotland. So it's almost worth having the gamble, but it's high risk. It's very brave.
A statement call, you know. I mean, as well, kind of just laying the gauntlet down to them, you know, 5 days before the game.
I said that I spoke to some Irish an Irish thing yesterday, and they said they must be very scared of our four. I mean, we've announced it 48 hours or whatever many hours before. We say to them, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Try and do something about it. Better practice your ball defence. You better be really ready for what's coming. So, no, I think it is massively laying down the gauntlet.
And the chat dobber around, you know, we've seen a few calls, especially in the international media, about the safety concerns and it not being good for the game, you know, because benches are supposed to be there, you know, to provide cover for specific positions, and they're only supposed to come out if guys are injured. This now, when you can just, you know, play two packs 40 minutes each, you know, and what it's going to do to the game as a whole. Do you have any concerns around that?
No, none. And I know they're going over hard on it overseas, but my feeling is that you know, if Evan Etzebeth comes off, you know, John Klein, it's not like that's becoming more dangerous.
Yeah.
The two areas I think with these pack are meant to do damage is in the maul and the scrum, and meant to get us penalties as other teams fatigue. There aren't scrum injuries anymore, mercifully, thanks to excellent work, you know, Box Smart and all that. Because that's with all the paralyses of the 80s and 90s with scrums.
Mm.
It doesn't happen. And then I've never seen a maul injury. Never. So I think that's about, it's a tactical thing. Because you're giving elsewhere. You're giving by not having maybe an X factor back coming on. You are running a risk. But I think I don't see a safety concern. And I don't think it's going to spread throughout the game, because one day somebody's going to quarter their pants down. You know what I mean? So an early injury, and then somebody goes off and you've got Quagga Smith on the wing. That's the risk. And that's why coaches aren't going to do it going forward, I don't think.
John, all this talk about the bench now, one of the guys on the bench is Dion Fourie, who's now covering hooker. Obviously, it was a big talking point when Pollard was drafted in, why Joseph Dweba wasn't picked. Obviously, it would have been then a like-for-like replacement. Dweba's obviously one of your players. How's he? Have you been chatting to him about what has happened, and how's he responded to it, and how's his spirits at the moment?
Yeah, you know, I phoned him to say goodbye when I heard the news. And he said, goodbye, where are you going, Dobber? I said, well, aren't you going to France? And he said, no. Look, it had been explained to him. Look, I think he's only human. He'd love to be in France, so he's disappointed. But it's been explained to him. Yeah, so it's another big call. I'm not sure if it was the Scotland game we would have gone that route. Because the big risk is, you know, Bongi goes in minute 5.
Yeah.
And Dion's not going to be an offensive scrummer. We lose the impact of the bomb squad and that sort of thing. But I do think, but if it goes according to their plan, so that's why I say they've just taken a bet on this game. Because it goes according to plan. If you've got Dion and Marco von Staden, Irish trying to play catch like rugby phases, the steals are coming, you know.
Yeah.
So they've gone for that element of Marco Marx's play. Personally, I wouldn't have. I would have gone the safer route. But
yeah,
Joe's disappointed. But it has been explained to him, so he's not angry.
Can Dion scrum, Dobbo? I mean, if we're playing now a knockout game against France, and you know he's got to scrum for 30 minutes of that game, I mean, should we be concerned as South Africans watching? And how important is it? You know, we always think, help us understand. You know, I mean, we look at front rows and go, how important is the hooker really? We hear about good scrummages. We know Bongi and Bonambi is a good scrummager from what we've been told, but we always think about number one and number three being the guys who do the damage in the front row. I mean, can you get by with a kind of makeshift lighter option like a Dion Fourie in a big game?
I'm not sure. Not without the 7 or 8 years of play. I think Dion would be fine, but his mode will be to get through it. I mean, if I was in his position, you know, his weight. Yeah, Malcolm Marx, the opposition are in panic. 110 kilograms, 6'2" or 3", behemoth like that. So we lose the offensive. We lose the offensive element of that completely. Dion, I think, will be in, if the scenario you have against France, would largely be in survival mode.
Yeah.
And the hooker just pulls those two together. There's so much angle work, you know. The tight head, and then the tight head decide to pincer the opposition hooker, or they attack the opposition tight head. The hooker is absolutely fundamental.
Yeah.
So I think we do lose something there. They're trying to make it up. I'll be surprised, what, we got two more pool games. If there's on another injury, I assume a Joseph Dweba or somebody would be on an aeroplane there just to give security to play off. As I say, I don't see this game as the... I think we're just going for gold in this game because it doesn't really matter in some ways.
Mm.
Yeah.
Dobbo, just looking ahead to the Ireland game, you've obviously in URC, you've gotten some nice experience playing against all the Irish teams. You know, that the whole system seems to be a very streamlined system. What do you think, where do you think the Box are going to win that game? And how do you think, how big a threat will the Irish be for them on Saturday?
I think I saw in that game in Mount Pleasant or whatever it was in New Zealand, how we, because Ireland, Scotland, Scotland, the All Blacks, won fastball. All Blacks are multi phase, but they need fastball for their X factor. Ireland and Scotland, very similar in terms of that. So Irish want these phases. I think we saw in that second half in Auckland, the game we lost, how we slowed down their ball with the counter-racking. So Jacques, you know, traditionally been a team with lots of guys on the feet, and we've got this big wall of defence. Then we moved to greater line speed. Now we are causing massive drama at the breakdown. You saw Peter Steph, unfortunately Malcolm, Eben counter-racking. I think if that happens and we slow down their ball, we win this game. They need fastball for six or seven phases. That's what they need. And if on third phase is Mr. Ed Smith waiting and suddenly, yeah, so our tackler makes a tackle. Instead of recycling out and setting on the blind like the defence system used to be, he's recycling and going into that thing, just pulling, kicking, dragging and that. Slow their ball down, you force the Sexton to kick. With a Marnie, with our X-Factor in the back, they kick and they chase better be very accurate. So I think literally our sort of physical presence at the breakdown is where we win this game. We're losing a little bit at scrum time in terms of the scrum penalties. I still think with whoever's at hooker will get the more penalties. I just think that intensity, and I think the 7-1 thing, assuming you know, it's just going to take their legs, and as I say, deprive them of fastball, I think they'll have to kick onto us, and that's not what they want to do. And that's how I see it going.
That match, of course, kicks off at 9 o'clock on Saturday in Paris. The Springboks taking on Ireland—a huge, huge game of rugby. Dobbo, what have you made from the rest of the tournament as a whole? I mean, it looks like it's been one hell of a spectacle. The crowds have just been superb. I mean, what's caught your eye and stood out to you from the first two rounds of fixtures?
Yeah, okay. I think a little bit of challenges to me. All those smaller teams—the Uruguays, Chile's, Namibia's. Like in those first halves, it made us so proud because they look like parts. Yeah. They look like they can compete. So lots of them have scored early tries. Uruguay up 17-7 last night. The way they fall away a bit, I actually get a little bit frustrated. It seems like some tough refereeing calls on small teams towards the end of games. I think, I know you can't do it, but just have some humanity. Man. Don't card. You know, that's irritating me. Look, I saw the back end, the back end in Euro. Hell, man, was that really a ceiling off at this minute? Or Uruguayan scrum? I mean, they're on the ropes. Early hit, yes. I think the crowd, the atmosphere, I was very worried that we'd go back to box kicking because there's been a very worrying interpretation change in that, you know, when two teams go out, when you compete for the ball, that you don't have to be in the realistic position to catch it. You have to be in the realistic position to play it. So, Lloyd, if you're catching the ball at the back, if you're the last guy defence, you have to catch it. You can't tap it back because go back towards your try line. There's nobody behind you. But we let these other guys just jump up, you know, and they say that's just jumping into you as a position to play the ball. It'd be much safer and fair contest to catch it. So I was worried, but I think we're going to go back to what we saw in 2019. But now teams are kicking the open side contestables, which is more fun. So, look, I think in terms of the rugby, it's attractive and going to get better. So I think pleasing. I think it's going to grab massive light this weekend, massive momentum this weekend.
And in terms of the officiating, Dobbo, I know refereeing is a you know, source of hair loss for you coaches all the time. In terms of consistency and from what you've seen from the officials so far, I mean, in my opinion, I don't know about you, Ham, and I think it's actually been better than we expected.
It's been quiet. He talks about the refs.
And so I suppose you get those in the bigger games where you have those that one decision that changes an entire game of rugby in a big game. Maybe it's been
A team could get knocked out on a big decision and then hell can break loose, especially on social media afterwards. You know, so.
But from what you've seen, Dobbo, I mean, the riffing of the getting
I agree with you. What I like about it, it looked entirely consistent. So I think we've seen the same picture. You can't before say it's a horrible Australian or it's, you know, I think it's looked really even. What I do agree with you, Herman, I've got a funny, these laws are so tough now when it gets to the real sharp end. I don't know if we're going to pay back for some of the sins of the past or that sort of thing. I do think, and I know you can't justify it, there could have been more humanity to some of the smaller teams, you know, carding a Puchelier, you know what I mean? Just, yeah, the referees guy should be saying, listen, the game's won, but I know you can't do that. Yeah. But I do, so far it's been brilliant. With it says like that towards the sharp end, I don't know.
Agree.
Dobbo, we can't thank you enough for taking the time to come in and chat. I know it's a hectic time for you guys. We have to also just say congrats on the equity deal. I know, you know, there was a bit of panic and concern going on in the corridors and boardrooms of Cape Town Stadium. You must be chuffed that's all been sorted now.
Yeah, as I say, we've got a new field, a new ownership, hopefully some money to buy some food and stuff. So, you know, we feel like kids on Christmas Day. Yeah, we're very relieved. Yeah, yeah.
John Dobson, Stormers coach, thank you very much. This has been another episode of the Inside Pass. Thanks to all the listeners. News24 will be bringing you all of the Rugby World Cup action as we head into another bumper weekend. Thank you so much for joining us. All the best.